On Perspective this week, I'm joined by John Webster. John is an economist, business owner, and chairman of the Manx Technology Group, as well as an independent advisor to various investment funds and involved with the UN as an economic advisor to small islands. He was also economic advisor to the Isle of Man government back in the 1980s, so he's well qualified to talk about the economic situation in the Isle of Man. Since he left government, he has always tried to be supportive and constructively critical. So, John, I've invited you onto the programme because you made some interesting alternative policy suggestions on Manx Radio's budget programme, which I felt warrant more consideration than we had time for at that time. It's fair to say, though, that your ideas were met with a degree of hostility from the Chief Minister and the Treasury Minister.
Well, thank you, Phil. Do you mind if I start by wishing my wife Anne and my daughters Kate and Lucy a happy Mother's Day?
That sounds good to me.
No, I do that because no doubt we're going to be talking about a lot of statistics and finance, but at the end of the day, economics is all about making places a better place for ourselves and our families. And I want the Isle of Man to be a great place for my grandkids. It has the potential, and I'm afraid at the moment we are not realising the potential because of what I believe are inappropriate policies being used by government. Now, to answer your direct question, what was my main concern about the budget, and can I elaborate on that? Well, let's look at the basics. The basic situation is that the Isle of Man government is overspending by over £100 million per year. Now, normally a Treasury would be quite concerned about that, and that would feature highly in any budget commentary, and rectification measures would be taken within the budget for that. Now, that the rectification would be identification of new forms of revenue, particularly generating economic growth, and more particularly in our case, reducing the level of costs. Now, the level of costs in the Isle of Man are rising rapidly and continuing to rise, and the Treasury seems to have no interest in reducing those costs.
That said, one of the reasons that the Treasury Minister gave for increasing budgets in many places was, first of all, the economy is still recovering post-COVID. We have a report by Sir Jonathan Michaels that suggests that actually even after this quite significant increase in budget that was granted to the Department of Health and Social Care in this year's budget, it's still at 30, 40 million below the level it needs to be to deliver the service that he felt was reasonable. There was a further increase given to the Department of Education. I mean, again, post-COVID, Department of Education is facing all kinds of problems, particularly in relation to children not being able to adjust because they've missed out on nursery and social interaction for the 2 or 3 years of lockdowns and the like. So do you not see that from that spending perspective, there was a pretty strong case to be made for, particularly for increasing health and social care and education spends?
Well, obviously COVID did have an impact at the time, but I think the use of it as an excuse is getting a bit tired now. And if we want to look at the real statistics behind what's happening, look at the amount that government now spends on staffing. It used to be about 56%. It's now 63% and rising as a percentage of its total spending. Now, that is caused by a mixture of increasing staff levels and increasing wage levels. And there's a big disconnect. And one of my major criticisms of the budget was the disconnect between the bookkeeping exercise and the real underlying economy. Now, once you lose that connection, you have real problems. And I think we're getting an increasingly resentful private sector when they see the wage differentials changing quite dramatically. When this administration came into power, which let's say was about 2016, the same chaps have been around since then, the differential between the public and private sector was 8% on average. It's now 25% difference in wages. And that's before adding in any difference between the hours spent. In the private sector, they work an hour and a half extra per week, and pensions, which are generally on less generous on the private sector. So it's a real concern when you see the growth of the public sector at the expense of the private sector.
Again, the public sector workers, representatives, were they here today, would say, well, we've suffered from substantial increase, particularly in the last few years, relating to particularly energy costs, and dare we say it, the post-Brexit effect. I'm not sure whether we're allowed to recognise that really has caused economic problems. These things have created problems for people who are generally not particularly well off. Some of the lower paid workers, particularly in government's employ. And now, of course, as a result of this budget, they're paying more tax than their UK counterparts in certain cases.
That's an excellent point. And my criticism really is the amount of senior posts, particularly in management and the information analysts. I call them spin doctors, and most people would call them spin doctors, who, instead of trying to make the underlying product better, try and present it better. So instead of saying it's all right, why not try and make it all right?
Just trying to get back, because you made a point, and I was going to ask you a bit more about it at the time, and then we moved on a bit. You were saying that, if in effect, this is what's happened with government's presentation of the Manx economy and indeed the budget, that in some way the presentation as government sees it is quite different to the way perhaps you would see it. Is that what you were trying to say?
That would be one of the points. Just taking your point up and coming back to that, if I may. There's no question that frontline staff on the Isle of Man do excellent work. And they are underpaid, particularly when you look at the increasing taxation and the many stealth taxes which occur when government and other bodies increase the price people pay for things. So those people at near the middle and below the middle are doing very badly on the Isle of Man and will do worse as a result of the increase in taxation and costs. The people who are doing well tend to be the senior managers. And if you look at the distribution of pay over £100,000 now in the civil service and up to £500,000 for individuals, that, frankly, for an island of this size and for the work they do, seems to me to be excessive.
And the point about the spin doctors, were you trying to... I'm not sure what the point was you were trying to make.
There are two points. One, I think there are too many of them in government who are telling government ministers what they should be saying and how it should be said. And this, in many ways, detract from the underlying weight of argument contained in some of the documents. Now, I think it's very useful to have a look at the original KPMG report, which, amongst other things, said we should not just look at the overall population. It actually said that. And the big difference between that original report and the one that came out, Our Island Plan, was that the focus was all on the 100,000, then the 5,000 workers, and then the 10 billion national income. But the main report produced by government had far more photographs and far more platitudes than did the original. And people can see through platitudes. They want short, sharp, this is what it's all about, rather than we aspire to be doing this and we want the world to be a better place. People know that. They want to know how we're going to make the world a better place.
And this year's budget that Dr. Allanson successfully steered through Tynwald sets out government's plan for the next year at least, and it clearly prioritises health and education. It also gives a substantial increase in child benefit. It increases the available monies given to families who need to put their children into childcare, which helps them then get back into the workforce. These are positive steps, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, but there has to be a distinction made between distributing the cake and creating the cake. And all of the budget was spent on distributing cake from one taxpayer to another. If you like, compensating people for not doing too well from other people who are doing a bit better. So you make part of society poorer by making another part better. That's redistribution of income, which is the basis of a progressive taxation system, which I'm in favour of. What is lacking is any initiative to increase the generation of income. And one of my concerns is that the Isle of Man no longer has those drivers of the economy that it once had. And there didn't seem to be any recognition in the budget of the need to look for new drivers of economic activity. In fact, the increase in the basic top rate of taxation from 20 to 22% sends completely the wrong message to people. It's a tax rate we've had for many decades, and we've suddenly changed it. That must give great succour to our competitive jurisdictions, because it doesn't do much for our jurisdiction.
Ministers seemed genuinely shocked at the reaction, both from the media and the public, and also the Chamber of Commerce members, who very clearly pointed to a number of areas where they had deep concerns in relation to that budget. If, as you say, government is overly reliant on spin doctors, surely they've dramatically failed in their job by not spotting what would appear to be pretty obvious certainly it was to me that the budget seemed to do things that weren't particularly priorities that had been highlighted in the economic strategy, Our Island Plan. Our Island Plan, and particularly the economic strategy, was all about growing the economy. And one might have expected, I think this is the third budget now of the Cannon administration, to have seen more in there that would explain how we were going to grow the economy.
Exactly. I think if you listen to a very good recording, it's of the Economic Review Committee from Monday of this week, last week, and it's the Chief Minister and another minister and some officers talking about the development of the plan. And one of the things which I was very pleased to see on a very positive note is a recognition by the Chief Minister that you can't just go by targets without thinking through. Now, what has appeared to happen is that we've been driven by targets and we haven't looked at the implications of going for those targets, nor have we looked at the way in which we should attain the targets. Now, basically, targets are irrelevant to people. They just want a happy life. So when we get to 100,000 people, people aren't going to say, oh, right, we can have 100,000 people day. We can all celebrate that. No, people are saying now, what's happening to our medical services? Why does it take me a month to get an appointment with a GP? Why do we have 4,000 or 5,000 people waiting for a dentist? These are the realities of today. And people don't want to forsake today for aspirations of tomorrow.
And yet, how do you solve these problems if you don't spend money? Particularly in relation to the health services, we have the report from Sir Jonathan Michaels, which says we've got to spend more money if we want to benefit from the fantastic health services that we all aspire to. If we're going to do that, we're going to have to spend money to actually make that happen.
Spending shouldn't be the criterion. It should be the outcomes which matter. Now, if you look at the Isle of Man Medical Society report, which was issued last week, it's very interesting in that it looks at the amount of management bloat, and it looks at the amount spent per capita on the Isle of Man compared with elsewhere. Now, in the Isle of Man, we spend over £4,000 per capita on health services. Throughout the UK, they spend less, about £2,500, depends where you are, Scotland, Wales, and England. But we spend considerably more, and the comment by the medical society is that we could have a very good health delivery on the Isle of Man if that money was spent and managed more wisely than it is. And that's the point. So when people say, we can't, there are no cuts to be made, there are cuts to be made. And these are the professionals who are telling us where those cuts can be made.
Well, I suppose the part of the problem really is how do we reform and reshape government to make it more streamlined? I remember when the KPMG report came out, which was what governments, basically they paid a substantial amount of money to KPMG to come up with the solution to the Isle of Man's problems. And part of that was we needed to grow the population, particularly the economically active part. I did, in a quiet moment, sadly not on air and not recorded, question the author of the report and one of the ministers, and basically said, well, this is all well and good, but a big part of the problem here is that the way in which services are delivered is part of the problem. It can't be denied that a more streamlined way of delivering services would help in the Isle of Man. And the response that I got was, well, yeah, but we've only got 5 years to make this happen, and that would take much longer if we included a radical reform of how we actually deliver services as government. So I must say I was quite surprised by that, that it's too hard, therefore we're focusing on what we can deliver.
I'm afraid that seems to have been what's happened. They've been driven by targets without thinking, as I said earlier, about the implications of getting those targets. And to achieve those targets and keep people happy, you have to put all of the elements in place. The last time we had a policy planning review in the Isle of Man, we had a small committee and we said, okay, these are the areas we could develop. What do we need to develop them? We need the legislation, we need the staff, we need this infrastructure, and let's go ahead and sell that message sensibly that we've got all of those attributes in place. And we did that ahead of the marketing. And any company which tried to sell any product would always start, the marketing starts with the product, so you make sure the product's very good, and then you decide which channels are best suited to marketing those products. You don't go ahead and say, oh, we're going to sell this as a product without thinking that through. Anyone who watches The Apprentice any week would know that. So I think what the Isle of Man's got to do is say, okay, what is the product? Let's think seriously about the product and let's think how we can sell it. So far, I think people undervalue the potential of our product, and therefore we're basically buying people to come here rather than having people want to come here. And that change in attitude and philosophy completely alters the game.
Well, we'll explore that in a lot more detail after the break. You're listening to Perspective, and I'm talking with John Webster, economist, business owner, and all-round good egg. And we were talking just before the break about how we change things. Well, your government set up a few years ago now an agency model which engaged with people from the private sector, so they were sat round making decisions alongside the civil servants and the politicians. I mean, that surely is a good thing, because it allows the decision maker, which ultimately has to be the politician, the minister, to get really good feedback and engagement with the private sector.
In theory, it's a good thing. In practice, it doesn't work. And can I? It might take me a few sentences to describe why. Proper understanding of a business requires an intelligent person to go and see the head of that business and decide what that business requires. And they will have an in-depth conversation where both sides will have mutual respect, and that business may make the decision to come to the Isle of Man or else go elsewhere. What you can't get by a group of people is you get a milk and water consensus rather than a new idea. And one of the reasons is that no one wants to give their good ideas to their competitors or to anyone else, basically, until they've developed it. So you get this consensus, which it can be quite meaningless. The second thing is that the agencies actually don't have ultimate power. So anyone with any real drive and a low tolerance of bureaucracy threshold won't stay there very long. And prior to the agencies being populated by people, five potential agency members came to me, not together, separately, and said, would I go on? And I said, no, and I'd advise you not to go on because you'll soon be very frustrated. They said, well, we want to do our bit for the Isle of Man. And in reality, they've all left. And they've left because of frustration that they couldn't get anything done, because the agencies have become a reason for government not to consult with the real world. So the ministers can say, oh yeah, we've spoken to the Chamber of Commerce, and I've on the Chamber of Commerce, so I know how it works. It's a device for government to pretend to understand and to consult. In reality, they need to go and talk to the people who are actually doing the business and who will be prepared to tell them confidences in the knowledge that they won't be shared with their competitors or others. That's how the real world works.
The Chamber of Commerce certainly, it began with a fairly strong and clear message to government following the budget, although it seemed to row back a little bit from that afterwards. But you know, there's no doubt that if government is genuine about listening to people who are trying to grow the Manx economy, then they've been given quite a strong rebuke from businesses. Why do you think, because it certainly shocked me, why do you think government reacted so angry? Well, it was almost like a toddler who'd had his shiny new toy taken away from him. You know, it was that level of, I don't know, it just seemed so surprising to me that as a minister, you expect criticism. And if it's reasonably constructive, you know, that's not an unreasonable thing. But they seemed completely surprised and nonplussed by the reaction to the budget?
Yeah, I think basically the lower the level of competence, the thinner the skin, really, isn't it? And unfortunately, the once very productive private sector, public sector relationship has now gone by the board. And I think that's one of the real problems for the Isle of Man.
That's a fairly strong thing to say. I mean, what makes you think that?
What makes me think that? Quite a lot. Do you want me to give you a case study on this?
Yeah, right. That'd be good.
This case study, and I haven't thought it through until you asked me the question, so I haven't got it written down, so it might come over in a bit of a garbled way. But let's look at an industry and how it started, the e-gaming industry. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, the e-gaming industry came to the Isle of Man because of its good regulation and its international reputation, etc. In reality, it was like many other industries on the island. It was serendipity. It was an individual who happened to be here, senior lawyer, who was recruited by the owner of Microgaming, and he said, oh, the Isle of Man's not a bad place to go. You know, it's a reasonable package. There's no overwhelming positive, but it's not a bad package. This was in about 2005. Because the lawyer, Paul Novelli, was on the Isle of Man, Microgaming, one of the leading producers of software for the industry, established itself on the Isle of Man. It knew other people in the industry at the top level, Continent 8, Nutella, and various others, PokerStars, were all attracted to the Isle of Man as a result of that one individual making the decision. That industry was very interested in helping the Isle of Man and formed as something called the Manx E-Gaming Association, MEGA. Now, MEGA regularly did surveys about what the industry was doing, how it was performing, how much money it was paying, what its problems were, and every year met government to say, this is how we're doing, and this is what would be helpful to us, or this is how we can help you. And that went on. We met regularly until about 2015, when government clearly weren't that bothered about what the industry was saying. And basically, they implied that they had the information anyway. Now, the result was MEGA stopped producing the information, and that supply of good, detailed, genuine information just went, and MEGA basically folded and it no longer exists. So the moral of this story, I guess, is there's the industry. It grows on its own. It doesn't want much encouragement from government, but it wants some. And I'm not talking about financial encouragement. I'm talking about, you know, it's nice that you're here and we'll listen to what you have to say, et cetera, et cetera. And it will do well, and it will help government, and there will be a mutually useful relationship. Now, that doesn't exist with that particular industry anymore. And it's interesting that those leading companies now are less involved with the island than they used to be. They're here and they are involved, but not as much. And the business that we're getting isn't quite the same.
Let's then talk, because you mentioned earlier about, you know, you need to have substance, you need in terms of the product. So what in your view, let's put aside what we may or may not think about the way in which government is doing this, but what is the product? What is it that the Isle of Man has that makes it or could make it an attractive place to do business?
Right. The island is a naturally quite attractive place. It's got a variety of scenery, and it could be the home to a number of activities. We've got more space than our nearby competitors. In particular, if you look at an industry like agriculture and fishing and compare it with tourism, most people would say, oh, tourism is a much more important industry. Whereas, in fact, tourist accommodation and agriculture represent the same share of national income. And what agriculture has is the ability to be completely different from elsewhere if it were properly nurtured. Now, proper nurturing requires looking at the product, ensuring that it's distinct from other products. So you say, okay, we will have a cordon sanitaire around the island so that people know that if they're buying a Manx meat or Manx whatever, it is disease-free and is produced in a great environment. It's packaged on the Isle of Man and sold. So the whole process from rearing to producing and packaging and marketing is on the island. That would mean you could add a lot of value to that product, and you would you'd have an industry which would grow, not enormously, but would grow. Now, that's what I mean by using the Isle of Man's attributes.
And it's a relatively easy thing to describe in relation to agriculture, but what we know is in most developed countries, the contribution to the economy of agriculture is relatively small, even when you include the food processing and all that add-ons and the high-end sell. We can't rely on agriculture.
Oh no! I started with agriculture because that's an easy one to understand.
Yeah.
Using that same approach to looking at the Isle of Man as a place to live, and the potential to have the island, if you like, packaged as a safe haven in an increasingly troubled world, you would reverse what we're doing now. And instead of attracting people by basically paying them to come here, you would make the Isle of Man a place where people wanted to go because it had intrinsic qualities, a high quality of life and a high standard of living and good services. So basically you would say, okay, we recognise that it's going to be very difficult to grow the population. The birth rate in the UK is declining dramatically. Therefore, we're competing for people in a difficult world. Let's accept that we might manage with a lower economy, and people aren't, as I said earlier, driven by targets. Let's go for a quality environment and make it more difficult for people to come here. So, in other words, to be a member of the Manx Club, which would be a good club with good health services and good standard of living and everything, you have to show your worth to the island. Now, show your worth doesn't mean it's attractive to millionaires. Someone would show their worth by being a good musician or good at a particular industry or a good worker or whatever, you know, all related to someone from the Isle of Man. So you have a number of gateways through which people could travel. But basically, the island would represent itself as a quality environment which people wanted to come to, rather than a place where we're trying to force people to come to, in a way.
I mean, one thing you said there, which I thought was particularly interesting, was in relation to population. And I think what you were saying there was growing the population is not necessarily the answer.
Yeah, that's what I was saying that.
So that's quite a bold thing to say, because most people, certainly most people in government, seem to think that this is entirely the correct answer, that without a more economically active population, we are in significant problems. And indeed, what we know is the dependency ratio between those who need your pensioners and children who no longer contribute economically compared with those who are in work and pay for things like pensions and childcare, child benefit and things like this, that ratio is becoming unsustainable.
Yeah, I don't think we should obsess about the size of the actual population. I think what people want is to have their needs properly catered for. And if you look at places like Japan, which is the epitome of a country with a declining population, it's solving its problems in different ways. Now, one of the key ingredients to this whole policy mix is the fact that in future it will be much more important to be more productive than we are. And the Isle of Man level of productivity is very low compared with other countries. So there's a lot of scope to save something like a third of our jobs on the island. They will go. A third of our jobs are going to go. So we've got all of those people available to do work. And we've got the increase in technology, automation, robotics, etc., which will make our lives much easier. Now, instead of just saying, oh, let's increase the population and think about the various ratios, remember, people aren't driven by targets. They're driven by outcomes and their way of life and how things are affecting them. So if we can improve their way of life and their health, for example, by using technology instead of people, that has to be the way that we consider it. A classic example would be telemedicine. Now, if I have a problem and someone said, well, someone in America is going to look at you over the airwaves, I don't mind, because I'm likely dealing with an expert in his field who deals with plenty of cases in a day. The same with the Isle of Man. We could have a few experts here, and we do, in fact, already do this, who sell their services overseas. We could do this with education. So distant learning, we could have a specialist number of people who are providing, let's say, economics worldwide from the Isle of Man. That's probably a bad example, by the way. But by specialising in a few areas and selling them more broadly, then you're reducing a lot of the problems instead of just going for more staff all the time. What I'm saying is there are different ways of solving these problems, and we should be looking at those different ways.
It would be remiss of us, wouldn't it, if we didn't address the government's tax strategy, which was published at the same time as the budget. And I think it was, well, certainly one of the ministers said recently that they were surprised that hardly any of the Tynwald members had turned up for the briefing. Ministers had, but hardly any non-ministerial members of Tynwald had turned up for the briefing. What do you think about this tax strategy? Because it does seem a little light, again, a little light on detail.
Well, you're being kind there, I think. They took 2 years to produce what basically is very little. And it's something which doesn't attack any of the problems of the Isle of Man. It doesn't say anything about productivity. It doesn't say anything about the shortage of houses on the island. We should have some form of land speculation tax, a more punitive tax on people who are using the Isle of Man for accommodation addresses and not living here, people who are increasing the price of houses and rents. There was nothing about that. There was nothing to increase productivity. And I would have liked to have seen something where we were encouraging people to address the issues I mentioned earlier of people liking to have new jobs in future because they're going to be displaced from their old ones. Now, that means that we have to start training people. Now, how do you train people? The best way to train people is to get the companies who are employing them to identify what skills they want and say to those companies, you train them and we'll give you some support. Now, I very much like something called the levy grant system, where you say every company in a particular sector will be charged X amount per head of employment, but they can claim that back if they upskill those people. So I pay in £1,000, but I can get that back if I spend that on training individuals. You immediately encourage people to upskill their workforce. And at the same time, you stop what does happen, and that's good companies employ, train, and then lose them to other companies who are just not prepared to train as much as others are. So you're encouraging the good, you're paying for the all people to pay for training rather than just the few good companies.
And so effectively what you're saying there is that if everyone's paying, you used £1,000, but let's
whatever
an example of that. If every company on the Isle of Man is paying £1,000, and which they can claim back if they train people, it's much more likely that every company on the Isle of Man is going to train people because it's in their best interest, because they'll have more qualified staff, which will then mean that they presumably will be more productive.
It's the principle rather than the £1,000 that's important here.
Yeah. And
right across the board, it's sort of, I was hoping that the tax strategy would refocus people from what we have now, which is a low wage economy, to what I would like to see, which is a high-skilled, high-wage economy. And the two are completely separate. And unless you focus on what you want, you're not going to get it. And at the moment, we're just at the low end of the marketplace. And we're not, when we encourage people and business to come to the island, we don't seem to put any restriction on what they do. We should be saying to people, we will encourage you to export because the Isle of Man needs new money. And if you're an exporting company, we will help you. But if you're not an exporting company, if you're just competing with existing companies, we won't give you any support. Now, that type of drilling down and making sure that the people you're getting and the businesses you're getting are compatible and suitable and helpful to the Isle of Man is a very important element in any development strategy.
So in terms of the actual tax strategy itself then, effectively, it seems to suggest that there will be a new levy placed on people for health and social care. There will be a tax on gas, assuming we get there. There's no mention of any tax in relation to renewable energy, or at least if there is, maybe I missed it. But beyond that, there isn't an awful lot of exciting new tax initiatives. I mean, what we know is that tax has the ability to influence people. For example, derelict properties. We know that if people are charged significant amounts of money for keeping derelict or indeed empty properties, then the chances are they're going to do something about that.
Yeah, exactly right, Phil. Taxes is obviously necessary to pay for services, but it, as you say, it can influence behaviour and is often used to do that. For example, smoking is a classic example. Mm. You know, you discourage people from smoking by increasing the tax. It was a disappointment, was the tax strategy, in that it didn't contain any really interesting taxes, even though they'd had a couple of years to come up with it. And what was, I said earlier, disappointing, was that instead of introducing the health charge at the budget so that they could keep the 20% rate level and not be seen to be possibly on the path for upward rates, because, you know, we've now got a bit of uncertainty about the level of income tax on the Isle of Man, they should have introduced that ahead of increasing the tax rate.
And it seemed surprising because the excuse or the reason given for not doing it this year was that it takes time to introduce the necessary legislation. But you would have thought that if government has been pursuing this tax strategy for 2 years and they've decided that actually this is something they want to do. They demonstrated in December that it is possible to put a bill through both branches in less than a day. So it is possible to do that. Was this just an excuse, do you think? Was it kind of a, gosh, we've got to do something, let's mention this, and very much a rush job, or is this a genuine reason for not introducing the charge?
Well, I don't know, I'm baffled, but certainly any spin doctor worth his salt should have spotted this as a problem, and it should have been identified. I mean, I'm assuming in another area which I was quite surprised was when my comment that they were having problems in the economy and that one of the manifestations was the rapid rise in NI arrears, and basically it was said, well, it's still a small proportion of the total. Mm. Now, the point is, if anything is rising dramatically, then you've got to be aware that this could cause big problem. It doesn't mean, I mean, if someone said to me, oh, you've got a growth in your body, it's expanding very rapidly, but it only represents 5% of your body, I mean, I'd still be worried, and I'd want it investigating. Now, the same with NI, you know, NI arrears are rising rapidly. That indicates that people are struggling, and that should be investigated, not just dismissed.
Because, of course, national insurance is a tax, the same as income tax, or similar to income tax at least. And if people have, for whatever reason, stopped paying it and think they can get away with not paying it, word will travel and other people will decide, well, if they're not paying, why should I?
Yeah, and you investigate why they're struggling, basically. That's the problem. That's another point. Ring fencing, which basically, it's technically called hypothecation of taxes, is not really looked on in favour. It's really one pot and you should decide where it's going to be spent. When people say it's ring fence, it's usually because they want to try and mollify the population that's receiving the increase in taxation. And in fact, it's much better to say NI is a tax on income, which it is, and almost identical to other taxes. It's interesting that the UK is now changing its theme on that, and it, you know, expects some other form of taxation, which we're going to have in the Isle of Man as well, with the health tax, of course. Mm. But ring fencing per se is not a great thing to do.
Well, we are coming towards the end of the programme. We've just got a minute or two left. Next week, Alex Allinson will be on the programme. So what advice would you give to the Treasury Minister? And as I say, we've not got a lot of time left.
The advice would simply be to listen to what's going on in the real world and not just to your advisers. You know, I know he says he listens, but hearing and listening and acting on sensible advice are sometimes different. And I don't know Dr. Allinson very well. I wish him well. He's got a difficult task. I recognise that. I'm delighted that the Chief Minister seems to, if you look at something we haven't mentioned, the new economic strategy, which is in this month's Tynwald, that's a much more realistic approach in terms of identifying some of the issues that are important, like financial probity, economic development, transport links, which is another thing we haven't mentioned today, the importance of having good connectivity between the Isle of Man and elsewhere. Those are all key issues which are necessary if this island is to make the best of its considerable potential.
Well, thank you very much, John Webster. You've been listening to Perspective. As I said, next week we will have the Treasury Minister joining us. Are you happy to pay more tax if the promised improvements in public services are delivered? Let me know your thoughts. Phil Gorn at manxradio.com.